Hi, it's Pete here from See Your Toes again. Do you suffer from anorexia? Do you suffer from voices? Do you suffer from self-harm? Have you had years of torment through your life? Are you starting to wonder if there's any hope going forward? Today's guest is a very special guest. Her name is Valerie. She has had all of these things all of her life. She has suffered terribly through her life. She has had all sorts of problems from when she was a child right through to the age of 40. Because of the length of this podcast, it goes for nearly 1.5 hours. I've broken it into three sets of roughly 30 minutes so that you can have a better understanding of where she's been going. If you have anorexia, if you know someone who has anorexia, if you are in a dark place and are feeling like there's no way out, then this is a podcast to listen to. Thank you very much.
Hi Valerie, how are you? Thank you for turning up.
I'm great, Pete. It's lovely to be here. I'm so glad that you invited me on.
And I saw from one of your tweets the other day that I'm number 21 on your list. I'm very impressed that you've done 21. You've done 20 podcasts already. I'm impressed with that.
Yes, it's been a whirlwind. I did about six in 2023. I was just getting started speaking publicly online about what had healed in my life. Prior to that, it had just been Twitter and Instagram and in print and typing it, but I had not, spoken about it face to face with someone to explain my story. So I had a few in 2023, but 2024, January 1, we hit the ground running. And I've done eight in the last 5 weeks, about two each week. So it's been an amazing opportunity to share with as many people as I possibly can to hopefully prevent someone else from going through what I went through.
Yeah, and that's from the information I know of your story, it's why I was so pleased to have you join me, because if there are people out there who are suffering as you were suffering, it's so great to be able to hear somebody who has climbed out the other side and made themselves better. You know, so many of these people think that that's it for them, that their chronic illnesses are just that's it. That's life done, basically. So I was really pleased. So thank you.
I was told for many, many years that not only were my mental illnesses permanent, but my physical ones were also. So yes, I have a very tender heart for those that feel hopeless and helpless because they've been told by medical professionals that there's nothing that we can do for you, that there is no cause, there is no cure. This is your lot in life, and you need to accept that. And we know, even in the mental health field, even if someone doesn't have the six diagnoses that I had for 40 years, one in four are diagnosed with depression. What I went through, even if it wasn't as severe as what I went through, anyone who has dealt with depression or anxiety, the root cause healing that I'm going to talk about is the same. No matter what minor mental health issue you're going through, the healing is the same. The nutrition component is the same. So, I think getting our message out about nutrition is just so dire and so important because we can even impact those that are dealing with a low level depression. They just, don't feel good. They just don't want to get out of bed in the morning. Many, many people have that experience every day. Millions of people have that experience every day. It's everywhere. It really is.
It is. It's so prolific. And a lot of people, of course, don't think of it as depression. They just think they're in a bad place. But if they stop and think about it, they've probably been in that bad place for a long time. And if they keep doing the same thing tomorrow that they're doing today, then they're going to remain in that bad place. But I think a lot of people too, sorry to interrupt, I think a lot of people too don't realize that the way they're feeling mentally emotionally can be so attributed to food. That's the big amazing thing, because people think mental health is from outside sources. It's from history, or it's from drugs, or it's from some other reason. And I'm sure you can tell us a different story.
Yes, and we don't get those messages from our doctors. I mean, even in the psychiatry field, no one in 40 years ever asked me what I ate. They just pushed the food pyramid. The hospitals pushed the meal plans of high carb and how to combine to be vegan, to be vegetarian, how to combine foods to have whole protein with beans and rice and wheat and peanut butter. And even the psychiatrists, they also attribute it to just a psychiatric condition, that your mental illness is just completely 100% from childhood trauma. Well, childhood trauma is horrendous in itself.
Yeah. Yes.
But you can work through those issues and still be diagnosed with those same mental illnesses, because you can process those memories and process those emotions and deal with that and lay it to rest. But that does not fix the root cause of the mental illness. It does not fix the neurotransmitters in your brain that are starving for nutrition because you've gone decades without the meat and fat that it needs, and combine that with eating the wrong things that have anti-nutrients and are antagonistic to those minerals and amino acids that your brain needs to heal. So, you know, it's a firestorm, and it doesn't have to be that this is strictly a psychiatric condition. It's a metabolic condition. It's a neurological condition that can be reversed.
And of course, your brain is what, 20% cholesterol or something? There's a lot of fat up there.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
And we, for decades, were told not to eat any fat, so that doesn't help.
That's correct.
Would you like to start from the start then, Valerie, because I've kind of taken us off on a tangent here. Would you like to tell us your story?
I sure would. As a young child, even before I was officially diagnosed with the six that I'm going to list, I was not well. I can remember being 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. I was very anxious and very sad. Now, there were things going on in my life that precipitated that, but my nutrition was very much a contributing factor. I grew up in the 70s, and there was hardly any meat around. It was fat-free, get rid of the butter, and it's now margarine. Cookies were fat-free. You know, everything was fat-free. Instant potatoes, everything was carb-heavy. My family thought, based on what was being taught as far as nutrition, thought that they were providing a healthy diet. That was when Cheerios and Kellogg's were, starting in their prime of this cereal is heart healthy. It's going to lower your cholesterol. And our meals were based around pasta and noodles and spaghetti and those types of large building blocks, whole wheat bread, all of those things that the mainstream pushes as what is healthy. And I can look back on it now and see the clear connection, because I was not well. I was a young child that was plagued with anxiety and depression. And it manifested in physical ways also. I was diagnosed with an ulcer at 12. My anxiety was so bad. My immune system was so bad that at 13, I was home for 12 weeks from school with a very severe case of mononucleosis. And the doctors misdiagnosed it for 8 weeks. And in those 8 weeks, they had me on 8 different antibiotics, which damaged my gut, damaged my immune system further. And it took a long time to recover from that. And I think, you know, the combination of all of those things really set me up for illness. By the time I was a young adolescent, 12, 13, 14 years old, new mental illness components were coming out. I felt out of control. I felt like everything around me was swirling and I could not cope. I really couldn't. I couldn't function. I couldn't cope. I spent days crying. School was difficult because I was a perfectionist and a people pleaser. And I could cry for hours after school and on into the evening if I felt that I had done something wrong or didn't please my teacher well enough or didn't do my homework perfect enough. This is when the clinical depression was diagnosed and the anxiety and panic disorder was diagnosed. And this was when the other diagnoses were added in and I started my life under traditional treatment and many, many psych medications. So in addition to the depression and the anxiety and the panic disorder, I had also developed OCD. And at that time, it manifested itself as body checking and counting and memorizing calorie books and over-exercising with cardio for hours in the day. I had the compulsion. I could not stop what I was doing. I literally could not stop. There was a drive in my brain that was driving me to self-harm, and I could not stop it. The OCD later got worse, and I developed another set of behavioral issues related to the OCD. I was cutting my arms and legs. And I also was diagnosed with a condition called trichotillomania, which is hair pulling. I was pulling hair from my scalp and my eyebrows and my eyelashes. That was, it's hard to explain when someone has not gone through it, but it's in your brain that's driving you to do this. In the moment, the 5 seconds that you give in and you do this, there's a release. I try to explain it like a bulimic binging and then vomiting. That 5 to 10 seconds that they are vomiting, there is an actual release in their system. There's a calmness for those few moments because you are giving in to what your brain is telling you to do in terms of self-harm and self-punishment. Now, of course, it doesn't last, but that's the initial release. That's the initial drive that if I do this, I'll feel better. But it, of course, it's a faulty lie. This was when I was also diagnosed with anorexia. As an adolescent, I reached my height that what I am now. I'm 5'9", and I was never what you would consider heavy. I'm 5'9", and I was around 130 pounds as a 13, 14-year-old girl, but that's where it started. That was the other component of self-punishment, and I also was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder. This is a devastating, tormenting disorder where you hear audible voices in your head 24 hours a day that scream so loud that you cannot drown them out, and the only escape is sleep. So after year of it, you begin to pray to not wake up anymore. Mm-hmm. These voices for me was an audible male set of voices that screamed at me not only self-harm, but to harm others, to harm my family. There was a component of paranoia in there that others were going to harm me. It's devastating. And you feel locked in your own head. You feel like you're standing on the sidelines of your life and you can't reach reality. You can't be present with your family and enjoy being alive. It's torture. Mm-hmm. My first inpatient experience was at 16. I was, of course, didn't want to go, but I also was out of control and didn't know what to do anymore. My family found an inpatient facility in Ohio. And what I'm going to describe to you, it still goes on today. I have since come alongside and visited those that are in mental wards and eating disorder units now. And I'm heartbroken that the protocol, the quote unquote treatment, has not changed at all. You know, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And so for 30 years, their approach has been the same and it has not changed. And that is why I'm passionate about what we are all doing in this community, because we have to affect change. So when I was put inpatient, a lot of the hospitals have a rule that you're in a double lockdown facility. You know, you not only can't leave the hospital, but you also can't leave the wing of the hospital that you're in, even to go walk around. Now, I understand the premise. They're trying to keep you from burning more calories. They're trying to keep you stable medically and to eventually put weight on to release you and proclaim you well and go home. But it's difficult to be strapped to your hospital bed, and any time you are taken somewhere, whether it be a shower or group therapy or the psychiatrist, you have to be in a wheelchair. The first thing that's done is a feeding tube is inserted, the nasogastric NG feeding tube. The ingredients then and the ingredients now are the same. The top three ingredients are canola oil, high fructose corn syrup, and soy.
Wow.
Those are the same ingredients, not only for an NG feeding tube, but they're also the top three ingredients for all of the over-the-counter ready-made drinks that we can purchase to, quote-unquote, help our nutrition, like Ensure and Boost that you can find in the store. Any sort of liquid-flavored nutrition that they claim, you know, has protein in it. Those are still the top three ingredients. And this is used for children who are not thriving. It's also the top three ingredients in most baby formulas. It's what's used, of course, for eating disorder units or anyone that has had any kind of throat surgery or any kind of gastric surgery. And they need what they deem as nutrition in the hospital. It's also used in nursing homes for the elderly who can no longer eat food, or as an adjunct to nutrition. Those three ingredients are so inflammatory to the brain. Mm-hmm. That's all it is inflammation and calories. The hospital's protocol is to cause you to gain weight. And when you are at their considered safe weight, they consider you well and let you go home. But weight restoration on carbs has nothing to do with healing the mental illness. You just walk out of there with more pounds on your frame, with the same mental illnesses that you went in, with no reduction at all. When the feeding tube comes out, then you're expected to eat the tray of food that is ordered for you either by yourself or with the other inpatients that are there in like a group room where everyone is served their meals and snacks, three meals, three snacks a day. And the hospital that I was in And this is something that people have to research before they choose to go into a hospital. The one that I was in was vegan / vegetarian based on the CEO, based on the backers to the hospital. This one in particular was funded by and backed by the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And so there was no meat protein at all on my tray. It was peanut butter and whole wheat bread, beans and rice, whatever on the meal plan that the dietitian could combine two foods together to try to make a whole complete protein. But of course, we know that combining those and coming up with the required amino acids doesn't mean that your body is absorbing them, because the amino acids that are in the plant foods are being antagonized by the anti-nutrients that are in the same plants. So you're not getting the amino acids or even the minerals that you get when you eat animal products and meat and fat. The rest of what was on my tray was all ultra-processed foods. It was cakes, cookies, pies, bagels, donuts, pancakes, waffles. And you have 2 hours to eat all of this and prove to them that you're better. And if you can eat all of this, they, after a set of weeks, pronounce you better and allow you to go home. And you have a care team. You have a psychiatrist that you go to every other day. You have group therapy with a psychologist, with the other inpatient girls and boys in that wing. You end up seeing a registered dietitian, a nutritionist. You end up having cognitive behavioral therapy, occupational therapy, music therapy, anything they can throw at it. And of course, pharmacology. You know, at this point, you're started on psych drugs. And for me, that looked like heavy psychotic meds to try to combat the voices of schizoaffective, very high-powered SSRIs to combat the depression, and other psychotropic drugs to deal with the anxiety, the OCD, and panic attacks. So there was just a cocktail of whatever. And when I had side effects or I wasn't improving, they would, you know, switch them out for another set and say, we'll try this.
How did those drugs make you feel on a daily basis?
Awful. After dedicated 30 years on them and 12 psychiatrists and 11 different psych meds, 10 years prior to my healing, I titrated myself off of them. I was functioning worse on them than I was without them. I felt flat, that I couldn't feel the deep sadness of the deep depression, but I also couldn't feel joy. I just felt very, very flat. And the medications that were specifically supposed to target the voices made me a zombie. They were so sedating that I could not function. You know, I would take them at night, hoping that by morning, or at least by noon, they had worn off enough for me to function during the day. But it was horrible. I was just so sedated. I was, and it did nothing for the voices. So it made me feel like my body was completely like a wet noodle. I couldn't move. I couldn't walk and move myself in the house and drive and feel productive. I was a zombie and just staring off into space on the couch, feeling like I was trapped in my own body and in my own mind. And all the while, the voices still screamed at me just as intense. So it made it worse. The drugs made it worse. And the doctors would not help me go off of them, the last set of doctors that I had. So I had to find and research titrating protocols that others had used to try to wean myself off of these with the least amount of detox side effects. It took me about 3 years to get off of them and feel like a human again. Yeah. So when I was let out of the hospital that first time, nothing was better. I was 10 pounds heavier, but nothing was better. I can, you know, it's been almost 40 years, but I can still remember my family driving me home from the hospital, and I'm staring out the window of the car, and that's all I can think about is going back to not eating at all and swallowing bottles of laxatives to get rid of the food that I did eat. Nothing was better. I continued on with therapy. You know, that care team that took care of me in the hospital became who I went to see on a weekly or biweekly basis as a teenager. Eventually, that care team pronounced me treatment resistant, and those relationships were severed. And so I was on a quest with my family to find a new, you know, new care team. Over the course of those 40 years, I had 12 different psychiatrists who were connected with different hospitals and had their own team to care for me. So it was very difficult. I managed to finish high school. I attempted to go to college, and that was difficult. I went to college for 2 years, and I had to quit. My weight dipped so low that my dorm mates were alarmed. My physical condition was deteriorating so rapidly that I was blacking out in the shower and in the bathroom, and they were finding me and bringing me to. The medical center connected with the hospital, the nurses and the doctors that are there on staff that provide care, were alerted by some of my professors of my deteriorating condition, and I was either going to have to quit on my own or they were going to force me to. At that point, I was around 90 pounds as a 20-year-old. And so I stopped college thinking that I would use all of the energy that I had used in college to retain a 4.0 average. I would use that energy to work on myself. And I went back home to live, tried to hold down a part-time job. That was difficult because I was so malnutritioned that it was difficult to stay up and not require the rest that I needed because I was just so tired all the time. At 22 to 24, I met who was to become my husband. His love for me made me feel unconditionally loved by a man in my life for the first time in my life. And so he helped me have hope again to try again, to try to get better. But the tools were the same. You know, you just go back to the meal plan from the hospital and from the clinicians, and you try to eat more. So, you know, instead of just eating celery and spinach in my extreme starvation days, the way I would mitigate and try to get better was to add in oatmeal and rice cakes or baked potato. That was the ebb and flow to the extremes. But even when I would put weight on and consider myself to be eating more, it was still all plant foods that, you know, we know now contain the antagonists and the anti-nutrients. It was never meat and fat that was put in. That was the first thing to go when I became anorexic, and that was the same foods that I continued to avoid. As I got older, this was just my life. By the time I hit 40 years old, I had been hospitalized 7 times. And in and out of treatment, the same types of treatments. And at this point, at 40, that many decades of starvation, that many decades of malnutrition, I began to have major medical complications, major physical complications. Anorexia holds the highest mortality rate of all psychiatric illnesses. 20%, 1 in 5 die. And it's either by starvation or suicide to escape the torment, because there is no betterment to it. There is no permanent recovery or freedom within traditional treatment. Or organ failure happens that go into cardiac arrest and die from a traumatic event. So I had many physical problems starting. Things were shutting off terribly. I had not had a menstrual period maybe twice in 20 years. I had completely shut that off. So all of my hormones were tanked. My adrenals were a mess. I had chronic fatigue syndrome. My thyroid was a mess. I had hypothyroid. I'd been diagnosed with severe osteoporosis at 18. And so The next 30 years, functioning with no nutrition, already being diagnosed with that, my bones were a mess. The last 5 years, between the ages of 43 and 47, before I found and embarked on my healing, I had 5 fractures within 5 years because of that osteoporosis. I had constant bone pain, and those fractures were devastating. I was on crutches. I had casts. I had braces. I was housebound. I was bedbound. You combine the fact of your bones being so brittle for that many decades of malnutrition, plus I wasn't consuming anything that was going to support healing. A fracture that should have taken 4 to 6 weeks to heal and then be able to go back out and walk and use your arms and legs took me 4 to 6 months. Mm. So it was a long recovery process. And then, you know, when I recovered and I would live a little again in terms of walking or exercising, I would just snap something again. It wasn't trauma. It was over-exercising, power walking. I would power walk and snap a bone. I would lose my balance at home and fall on carpet just from standing position and break my wrist. So it wasn't trauma. It was just everyday activities. And given the fact that most people don't know that your bone is 50% protein, if you are not consuming protein in abundance, there is no building blocks to rebuild that bone. You just continue to deplete your bones year after year after year.
So that's part one of the story with Valerie. We do have part two and part three coming up in other podcasts and separate podcasts. And I hope you tune in. The best way to do that, if you can, subscribe. I'd love to have you subscribe with me. We also have other guests coming on in the future who will talk about similar subjects, including mental health and physical health. So I'd love to have you on board. Okay, goodbye.